This is the Actual Fluency Podcast, helping you become a better language learner by providing motivating weekly inspiration, as well as top tips and tricks from expert guests. And now, your host, Chris Broholm.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 112 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk to language learners, influencers, industry experts, and high achievers who have done something with languages. And it's basically designed to inspire you and motivate you, give you ideas on how you can revolutionize your own language learning or get started on those language learning ambitions or dreams that you've been holding in for so long. This is episode 112, which is kind of a funny number because in Denmark, and I know some other countries as well, it's the emergency services number because they felt like, as you know, in America, it's 911, and it's done so you don't accidentally press it in. So it's two digits and then a third digit. So this is not going to be a crisis episode just because of the number, but I just thought I'd mention that because as a kid, obviously, you're taught very early in Denmark, at least, that 112 is the emergency number. So we're going to do our best to give you some positive and uplifting news today and no emergencies, hopefully. Before we get started, I just wanted to quickly give a shout out to one of the companies that I'm working with called Baselang. And the reason that I want to give a shout out to them is because they offer unlimited Spanish tutoring for $129 a month. And I tried them myself, and it's a fantastic service. And the reason that tutoring is so efficient is, it's hard to quantify one reason, but when I did tutoring for my Russian last year, or maybe even 2 years ago, Jesus, time flies, I was really stuck and frustrated at my level of Russian. But once I got that weekly tutoring in, because iTalki, where I had my Russian lessons, had a challenge on where you had to do, I think it was 20 lessons in a month, which for me was quite a lot of lessons. But I started doing weekly, or I guess more than weekly, if I had to get to 20. But I did 20 lessons in a month. And it was tough. You know, it's a lot of work. It's very mentally draining to speak a foreign language, especially if you're very new at it. But my level just, everything became real in a way. So I couldn't say much when I started tutoring. So we had to do very basic phrases and sort of go that way. But a couple of months later, we were having like one hour conversations. And no, they weren't, you know, super difficult political conversations or like complex in any way. But, you know, we were talking about our daily lives and, you know, what we do and what I did yesterday and all these things. And the feeling of speaking your target language for 1 hour without using any English, man, it was just crazy. Like my body was, you know, giving me endorphins and adrenaline. And it was so, yeah, I can't really describe it more than that. It was just amazing. So that's why I highly recommend Baselang. And so it's $130 a month and it's completely unlimited. There are no strings attached there. And if you want to get started, I recommend you go to actualfluency.com/Baselang because then you get $10 off your first month as well. And you support the podcast and its partners as well. And that is unfortunately at this time only for Spanish. But I know there are a lot of you guys learning Spanish out there at the moment. So enjoy Baselang. It's really a good service. And I tested it thoroughly with my own body. Today's episode is a great one. It's a little bit different because I'm talking to Sarah Barrett from Lingotastic. And Lingotastic is kind of like it's for the youngest kids. It's for very young kids, maybe even toddlers if you want, or babies, I guess, can also benefit. But the topic is simply language encouragement for kids today. So we're going to be talking about basically how do you give very small children the kind of introduction to language learning without forcing it on them or without sort of, you know, putting them in a classroom, which they probably wouldn't enjoy. And Sarah has done that really well with her husband, Mike. They do the Lingotastic. And they're really great people, by the way, really kind and and sweet. And it was a lovely talk. And we talked about many things related to encouraging the youngest kids. If you're not really into this topic, I understand some of you guys would be sitting out there, you know, maybe you're 15 and you like kids. I'm not going to have kids for the foreseeable future. Then maybe skip this one and go to next week's episode. But for all of you who have kids or who are planning to have kids out there, this is a really good talk about just the very tiny things you can do to introduce language learning to their lives. You know, it's not about forcing it. It's not about making your child speak 10 languages when they're 10 years old. It's simply about getting them tuned into the fact that there are different languages and showing the sounds and stuff. But I'm going to hand you over to the actual recording now and let Sarah talk much more about that, because she's the expert in this. I really don't know much. And so that's why I'm in the episode. I'm asking all the silly or stupid questions that I can think of. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Sarah, and I hope to see you in episode 113 next week.
Yeah, I mean, I started learning languages in school, so probably about 12. My family didn't really do languages. At about 12, I started French. And then when I was 13 in senior school, I did some German, and my German teacher told my mum I was quite good, so I ought to do that. So I did. So I did French and German. We call it GCSE. I don't know what you would call it in Denmark. I'm from Northern England, so it's a different setup. But I started we went to a senior school at about 13, which you go then till you finish, more or less. Obviously schooling is different in different countries. So I did GCSE, German and French, and then, sorry, my notifications. I did GCSE, German and French, and then when I was doing my A-levels, I quite fancied doing some Spanish as well, so I did Spanish in a year alongside my A-levels. I did all right, really. I got A's and B's and quite enjoyed it. And then I decided to do nurse training, so I went to university to train as a nurse and met my husband, who is German. So that sort of meant I started to bring my languages back. In fact, the only thing I remembered of German was "Wie komme ich am besten zum Bahnhof, bitte?"
Very useful.
So yeah, in the middle of nowhere, I was like, I remember some German. "Wie komme ich am besten zum Bahnhof, bitte?" To which he just laughed. But it is random what little phrases you do remember from, I don't know, somewhere in the ether there's these phrases that come back out of nowhere, I find. So anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was interesting. So him being German, I decided the business faculty offered some languages, so I did some more advanced German there. And that's about it, really. And I didn't think anything of languages for years. I did my nurse training. And then my youngest son was born, and I wanted him to have a little bit of German, and Mike wasn't keen to pass it on because he'd been in the country a while, but he still wanted to, I think he wanted to work on his English. So he didn't really want to do much German with my lad, which was driving me crazy. So I sort of did it, really. I just taught him what I knew, and we got German books and, sorry, DVDs and toys, and I just sort of, I didn't actually know what I was doing, but we just did it and it seemed to work. And we'd play on the swings, pushing on the swings, and we'd count. So we went 1, 2, 3, 4, just while we're pushing on the swings. And we just brought it into every day, which was a bit, I don't know, looking back, it was a bit bonkers, but there wasn't an internet then, because Josh was born in 2000. So this was pre-internet, and we just sort of felt our way around and thought, well, we'll do the best we can, really, with him. So he learned quite a bit of German, so I don't think we did too bad.
Right. Well, that's interesting for sure.
Yeah, but I don't know, I just felt so strongly that I wanted him to be able to speak with his Oma and his German family, and if we didn't pass on German to him, that would be missing for him. But we also found some lovely French books and Spanish books in charity shops, so we used to read to him in different languages as well, just because we could. And it never, I don't know, it never occurred to me that wasn't normal, if that makes sense. It's just what we did.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
So and when
today's 17, 18?
17 is Josh now, yeah. It's a bit scary. Makes me feel so old.
Time flies.
Oh, it so does.
And
but yeah. And then when Josh was seven, so 2007, I had Jasmine. And then shortly afterwards, I had Emily. And we did some languages with them, but actually having two girls in such close succession was a bit manic anyway. So we did bits we did bits with them, but it wasn't quite so structured just because life was a bit chaotic with three kids. Although, but we did, I think, yeah, we did stuff, but just not, it wasn't quite as consciously, really.
Right.
And then when the girls were small, I started a toddlers group. Yeah, that was. I started doing the creche at church because there was no one doing it. So I thought if I start running it, then other people will join in. So we sort of set up that, and in that we were singing and playing together and just having fun. And then a little bit. It comes from quite a Christian basis because that's where I'm from. And they it was things like you'd get your mirror out and sing a song about how you're special and God loves you, or you get your. There was a prop for every single song we did, so we sort of, it was really structured, but it was really simple. And it's all about building up the children and letting them see that they're important, and actually, if the mums are there, teaching them how to encourage their own kids. So I was sort of singing and doing that with the kids for a while, and then a few years later, I decided with a friend of mine to set it up as a toddlers group for. On a weekday toddlers group, which sort of quite a normal, most churches have something like that, a free group for people to come along to. So we'd set up a toddler singing group. So we just sort of went from there. And in doing that, I learned a lot of skills about interacting with kids, which, I mean, I've worked with kids for a lot of years, being a children's nurse anyway. And as I, I was practicing lots of things and lots of ways of interacting with kids and finding out what worked and didn't work and things like that for a good few years. And when Emily, my youngest, was five, and I was looking at going back to school, going back to work, I thought, hang on, there's nobody does kids groups but that are languages. So I sort of started looking into it and looking into franchises and things, but franchises were just French or just Spanish, and they were thousands of pounds, which was just prohibitive, really, for what I wanted to do. So I thought, I want to do something where we're just playing with languages together, and mums and children can come together and just play with languages, and we will learn sort of as a byproduct of it. So it sort of all came from there, really. I've just been, I don't know, life comes like that. You've been practicing things over years, and then you're like, oh, that works there. And actually, I love to sing, but I've got a really loud singing voice, which drives my husband mad. But when you're working with kids, it means you don't need amplification.
Right.
It's just something as random as that. So actually, for me, it's perfect because I just naturally sing very loud. That's just, I don't have a quiet, I don't think I have a quiet button, full stop, but anyway, which is, in a teaching setting, is perfect.
Yeah.
So yeah. So we just do a lot. So when we, in the classes, we sing in target language. We have a story. We have puppets. We make things, and we just have lots of fun. And it just happens to be not in English, really.
Right. It's actually when you think about it, like you said a few minutes ago, you said it, to us it seemed natural or obvious. But when you think about it, it really isn't, you know. How many parents in England do you think are speaking any other language to their kids who are, of course, non-immigrants? You know, and I think the number is probably close to zero, if not zero. So
yeah, it's very interesting. I like to say my class is like Marmite. I don't know, do you have Marmite in Denmark?
No. I've heard of it, but I've never actually tried it.
Something you either love or you hate.
Right.
I mean, I get that feeling. I mean, one of the mummies, as soon as I even sort of started at marketing my class, got in touch within days, and she said, I'm in America at the moment, but I'm coming. Okay. But she trained as a primary teacher. She spoke Spanish, and she just totally got where I was coming from. She was like, I want to be able to bring languages in with mine from being tiny.
Yeah.
So she totally got that. And I've had a core group of mums, and the majority are teachers, to be honest, because they get it, because they can see the value of it.
Of course.
Either that, or they have, there was a lady recently who was a generation back, they spoke German, but it got lost one way or another. People that she hadn't learned it, but the family language was German, or other people that are native Spanish, but want to come alongside other families that are speaking more than English. So it's a real mixed bag. But then we get some people who say, well, my children don't even speak English. What are you doing? Such a British attitude. It's awful. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Denmark.
Similar, to be honest. They would probably say it with English just because that's so useful. But yeah. I mean, I definitely can't imagine any parents in Denmark are thinking like, oh, we need to introduce Spanish, German or French or any language other than maybe English early stages. Mm. And I think even then they kind of put all the responsibility at the school. And they say, okay, you start having English in second grade or something when you're, I don't know, 7, 8.
Too late.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, why start that late?
Good. Yeah, but that's because having, as I set this up, I looked into a lot of the research. And I mean, I don't know what you know, but years ago we went to the O2 Arena. It was they set it up in London. It was this massive millennium dome, and it was this big project about the millennium. And the one thing I remember, there's a thing about the whole human body and things, and there was a section about language development, and it said that all children babble in the same language. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 6 months, they start tuning in to the sounds of the language that they hear most commonly. Yeah. And from 6 months till about 5 years, they start to specialise in that. And that by the time you hit about 7, it's very difficult to introduce the new language sounds
from
other languages. Because if you think of things like Mandarin, you've got ni hao, it's a really different, it's a different feat. You can feel the difference of that.
Oh, yeah. Rather
German with rot and the guttural sounds. And each language actually physically feels different.
For sure, yeah.
So if you start really late, you've lost all that that elasticity in your mouth, and I don't know, the speech development stuff is a lot harder.
Yeah.
Because the younger children start, the better their accent is, the more confident they are, because they're just learning it alongside their normal speech, if that makes sense, rather than it being a separate thing. I mean, it gets me really excited, this.
Yeah. Me too, in a way, because you're kind of leading it's not a renaissance, because it was never like that. So it's more of a revolution, I guess, we're giving our next generation more opportunity, really.
Yeah.
And I think there are probably some people out there thinking that, oh, if I teach my kid, let's say, 3 languages from birth, then they will get confused and not speak any of them. But of course, that's not the case.
Sorry, that drives me mad. No, I mean, they do get muddled. But you see, my daughter is 7, and she still gets muddled with English grammar. She's determined that English grammar is going to follow rules. And as you know, English grammar doesn't follow rules.
No.
So she'll say, I ated that.
Right.
So even she's struggling with grammar at 7. So that just happens anyway with any language.
Right.
And bilingual children do get a bit muddled to start with sometimes, to separate. But I'm sure you found that when you're speaking.
Oh, yeah.
I would naturally go, if I'm not speaking English, I would speak German. That's just my sort of, that's my second strongest language. And it's taken a long time for me to sort of think, to shut the German down sometimes through French, or shut the French down through Spanish. So we do that as language learners anyway. So
kids
are just the same. And actually, our class, we don't do, as I was saying, we do different languages. So we'll do a 6-week block of French, a 6-week block of Spanish, a 6-week block of German. But for the French class, we've got a puppet that is our French puppet, and we always start off with our rockets. So in the French class, we go un, deux, trois, allons-y, and blast off with rockets. So there's that structure, and then we have a few songs, and then we have a story, and then we have a few more songs, and then we get our rockets and blast off again, and say goodbye to the puppet. So the structure, whatever the language is, the same. So they've got that. So I don't know. Kids work really well with structure.
Yeah.
So actually, they know where things are going then. So they've got that point of reference, whichever language it is. But it is amazing how they do. Yeah, I mean, there's a little. The first lady I spoke of, Cassandra, she's called, was the first mummy I had contact with. Her little girl at four could speak French, German, and Spanish. Just not lots, but she could say hola and adios and bonjour and au revoir, and you know, she was just getting there. And really exciting story with her, she'd not been, little Hannah was about 18 months, and she heard a song in the radio, and she went blast off, ding dang dong, which was blast off is what we do, and ding dang dong was from Frère Jacques. So she was recognising that song was in French. She was 18 months old, but she recognised the song was in French because her ear was tuned into French.
Yeah.
Mum was like, what? She was got smacked. But this little girl, even though she'd not even got all the verbal skills, but she was recognising the language sounds and the fact that was French.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing.
It's mind-blowing. It absolutely is. So, yeah, they're amazing. And I've recently started doing some school classes as well. So I go into a school and we'll do a block in French, a block in Spanish, a block in German, and we rotate. And one week, one of the kids said, why can't we do it in Chinese this week? And another one, why can't we do it in Italian? And I'm like, yes, they've got it.
Exactly. Yeah, why not?
Why not? Exactly, why not? And because a lot of people, there's other franchises out there that will just do French classes for you or just do Spanish. Sure. And I think then you're pushing them in to such a narrow thing so early on that they then don't see there's other languages out there.
Right.
And nowadays, I mean, Mandarin is one of them really up and growing languages. They're starting to look at doing Mandarin more in primary because they're realizing from an economic point of view, we need it. So yeah. If you start pushing kids into just French, they're going to really struggle, especially something like Mandarin, which feels so different to speak. It's a lot easier to get those, sort of get the feel of that language early on rather than
much older. Like if you can listen to tones when you're, let's say, a year or maybe even from the beginning, then you're just going to understand it so much better than if you try to explain it to an adult who's never heard of it before. Like, I understand the concept, but my ears are not very tuned to it at all. So all of them might like flow together in a way. Mm. So I think that's definitely a great idea just to get it introduced. Because I think the goal, like, I mean, it'd be great to have, like, let's say a five-year-old who speaks five languages as their native language, whatever that may be. Mm. But on the other hand, I also think that just introducing kids to languages and having the kind of excitement build up so when they go into school and they start German class, they don't go, ugh, German. They actually get a little bit excited about it. And then if they take that to, nothing or just can say a few words, that's fine. I mean, that's probably more than what would have happened before. But it's just that doing nothing I really don't like, that you just kind of shield them from other languages in a way. And then you put them in these German classes that are usually boring and repetitive.
Yes.
And they learn nothing and they hate it. And they think, I can't learn languages. So they don't try the Mandarin or the other languages. And so I think you just got to start from the beginning, really.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a really interesting study that came out recently. Because I'll go back a step first. I think what I'm doing is just putting really good building blocks in place. Because I feel like once we've got those building blocks and you just get an ear for the different languages, even if you don't speak them for a few years, they're there to access.
Yeah.
And there was a really interesting study recently. I think it was a Canadian study that they took a control group of children that had lived in China. They'd been orphans in China. So they'd heard Mandarin until they were 6 months. They were then taken to other countries that didn't speak Chinese and sort of brought up. And about 12, they brought them alongside some other children that had never heard Mandarin and started teaching them both Mandarin. And these children that had heard Mandarin all that years ago quickly picked it up because the foundations were there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, which to me, I'm like, well, like, my gut knows that. It just feels the right thing to do. And the other really weird experience I had not too long ago, we had a lot of Eastern European children join my daughter's school. So I was around and I heard somebody saying something and I suddenly thought, Dublino, why? But I didn't know when I'd ever heard that. And it's Slovak for good morning. I don't know when I ever heard that, but somewhere in my head it was there. But hearing that language activated something in my brain to suddenly come out with it.
Yeah.
Which was so weird. So that was just my personal experience, and I don't know when I ever even heard Slovak. Or well, it may not have been Slovak because all the Slavic languages are quite similar. But
for sure, yeah.
But yeah, that blew my mind a bit. I was like, I've never learned that. When have I even heard? Unless I think there may have been a missionary at our church that may have mentioned it, but I don't know where.
Well, the brain is just amazing, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
And especially kids, you know, I wanted to tell us of an experience I had recently, which is I was in Canada for the language festival, which is going to be in Montreal again this year at the end of August.
What's that one called?
Well, it's called Langfest.
They were talking to me on Twitter recently. I'm trying to get in contact with them. Brilliant.
Good people. But I was over there and I was staying with one of the organizers, Tetsu, for a while. And his specialty is actually teaching children languages, like with a focus on the parents, of course. So not so much these kind of classes or bringing together a group of children, but your own children.
And yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the first thing, right? You figure out how to teach your own kids, and then, you know, you can work on saving the rest of the community afterwards, but you got to help yourself first. But anyway, I was staying with Tetsu, and I got to see this kind of thing from kind of a first front row seats. And he just had a third baby, actually. But he has two. When I was there, he only had two. And Rani and Nika. And so Rani was about four, just below four. And he spoke in five languages. And it was insanely impressive. And of course, he sometimes confused them a little bit, but actually he was quite able to communicate. And what they did was just basically one speaker per language.
Yes.
So his father always spoke to him in Chinese. His mother always spoke to him in Japanese. The same with the grandmother. And then some other members of the family would speak to him in sort of the local languages, like Taiwanese and maybe Hakka or something, you know, some of these Chinese dialects. And then they had a Mexican au pair, so she would speak to them in Spanish. And then someone like me who was visiting would speak to them in English. And they went to a French daycare.
Awesome.
So you end up with these kind of five basic, but he also understood some dialects, but five languages. And it was just really amazing to see. And it's really fun for the kids as well, because they don't really feel it. You know, it's just natural. You know, if your dad has always spoken to you in a certain language, it doesn't feel weird to you that that's a different language from the others. So I just wanted to bring up that story because I feel like it's really amazing. And if people are more interested in how to kind of bring up your own kids with language learning, I definitely also recommend checking out Tetsu's work.
Is that Pampus the Polyglot one?
What's that, sorry?
Is he the Pampus the Polyglot guy?
No.
Not that one.
Okay, exactly. That's exactly the one. That was the name of his book, I think.
That's it. Thank you. No, I was thinking it sounded like, because there's not many of us that are really pushing children's language learning. So I tend to know who's out there.
He's amazing. But it was just interesting to see it from like a first row, because you can always talk about, oh yeah, my kids speak five languages and blah, 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 and this is what I do. But until you actually see it and experience it, then, you know, that's that it doesn't feel real until then. But
yeah.
So it's funny when, for instance, Ronnie, he didn't know that I didn't speak Chinese. So he went to Chinese first and I said, Ronnie, I don't speak that. And he was like, okay. You know, it's really funny.
Recalculate, which language do you speak?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but of course, it's a lot of work. Also, you know, if you get your whole family to speak a certain language to the child, then that's kind of the easy part. You know, you also need to stimulate with, let's say, books or songs like you use as well, or TV, or you know, there's lots of kids shows these days that are dubbed and easily accessible. So, but there's a lot that goes into it, right?
It is. It's not. It isn't an easy option at all. I mean, we weren't able to do the one parent one language, as I said, because Mike wasn't keen to at the time. So we've actually, ours has been a bit chaotic and a bit mishmash, but it has come together somehow. That makes it. But like, it's quite silly. I mean, I said to Emily, my youngest, says, I said in some families they only speak English, and she was gobsmacked. She was like, she just couldn't understand that.
Right.
And we learned a little bit of Mandarin a year or two back. So instead of saying, I'd like a cup of coffee, we'd say, Wo xiang yao, yi bei coffee, shi shi. So that's what the kids say now. If you want a cup of coffee, they'll say, Wo xiang yao, yi bei coffee, shi shi. Like, but that's just normal for our house. Or like, we've been doing Polish recently because we've got a Polish shop, so I can go in and order a little bit of stuff. So I say, can you pass the mleko or the leche or the lei or milch? And so to them, that one thing has all those names, and that's just perfectly fine for them.
Yeah.
Which is, I just think it's fun. We just play with language. I haven't all the songs I've done in the classes. So I do songs in French, German, Spanish, and Mandarin, mostly. So my kids know the songs, and they've only been to my classes once, twice, but they've heard me singing them, practicing them. So they could sing you the Chinese New Year song in Mandarin,
right.
But they think that's normal.
Yeah.
They can't see why, but they do bemuse their French teacher a bit because Emily came along with a lovely tongue twister that she learnt. Because as I said, my husband is currently doing a teacher training, so they're sort of watching his lesson planning, and they saw this tongue twister and wanted Daddy to teach it. So Emily at seven went in and told her teacher this French tongue twister. Was it la verre, va verre, la verre, which is the green caterpillar goes towards the green glass.
Right.
So she went and presented it to a teacher, and the teacher didn't know what to do. She was a bit bemused, really, because she didn't know what to do.
Well, at age seven, you're not really expected to speak any French, I guess.
Maybe they're just
hello.
They're just starting.
Yeah.
But but even when my girls have seen what my husband is preparing for, like year seven, so what's that? Probably about 12-year-old German. And obviously they're at that level, so they're looking and they understand it perfectly well. And we're like, well, you do realise that Daddy's teaching this to much older children than you. And they're like, oh. Because they forget they speak German, which is hilarious.
Right.
They say, well, we've done French at school, so they think they speak French. And you ask them to speak German and say, no, we don't speak German. You're like, but then you could ask them for something in German and they just reply. Because we from being tiny, we've done things like in the morning, we'll say, sure, Anne. Put your shoes on. Yeah, Anne. Just really simple instructions, because it's part of our getting ready in the morning. And actually, it's just bringing it into every day, really.
Sure.
Just little bits like that, and they don't even realise.
Right.
My middle daughter has decided it's not so bad nowadays. So one time they go through phases of thinking, Mum, you're embarrassing doing this. So. Because usually when dinner's ready, we won't shout upstairs, dinner's ready, we'll say, Essen ist fertig. So this morning, last night, Jasmine said, how do I say it in German? So I told her, and she shouted, Essen ist fertig. And I can't remember. Oh, look, we've been watching Moana. I don't know if you've seen Disney Moana. It's awesome.
No.
But she's, you've so got to. It's such a good, for a Disney song, Disney one's really good. But there was a phrase from it Jasmine had heard in German, so she suddenly just started singing it in German, and I'm like, okay. But she just they just play the languages.
Yeah.
they get a bit overwhelmed if they have a whole book in that language. It sort of scares them a bit, but have you come across Johnny 1/3 Stories?
No.
It is awesome. Absolutely awesome. Two young lads started a Kickstarter that I came across, and it starts off in English, and then you gradually introduce words of another language. So in the German book, the little girl has lost her Worte, so we have to go and find the Worte. And then a bit later on, she comes across a tea canner or teapot. And then so it, as the story goes on, the key sort of keywords that you understand from context are in the target language. So towards the end, you're reading nearly whole sentences in the target language.
That is very clever. So for like goodnight stories or just any time?
They're just stories. Yeah, I mean, they've got stories in French, German, Spanish, Italian to start with. There's books, and now they've just started a story box club. So they're sending them out monthly. But it's just such an amazing idea because it's, especially for families that don't speak fluently in the target language, it's
That's
enough.
Really clever.
It is. I'll have to. So it's one third stories. Look it up. And I'm not being sponsored for this at all. I love it.
No, it's good. That's the thing. Recommend.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I've got. I have a whole page on my website of resources because I know how flipping hard it can be to get hold of stuff that's worth using. You can spend a lot of time looking. So if I find something that's good, I will put it on our resources page so people can do that. And right. I've come across, there's a lovely lady called Henny Jacobs who does books in French and maybe French and English, but these animals are having conversation, but she doesn't translate it. They just happen to be having conversations together in different languages.
Right.
It's just such an awesome idea. What's she called? Betty and Cat, that's called. And that is awesome as well, because I'm just like, she just gets the idea that you don't need to translate directly. And you could have a French granddad reading with an English mum and it wouldn't matter. And it's just lovely. She's just got a real passion for, like me, she's got a real passion for just using languages every day and finding a way for bringing it into your family, whether you're expert or not, really.
Yeah, and then that's on linguotastic.co.uk?
Yes, if you look on my links page, they'll have some of this stuff.
Perfect.
Because, I mean, my mummy friends that come to classes. They are the lovely. Because they get it easy, so that's it. But a lot of them don't have massive language skills. But I say, if you've got enough to pass on, you can work at that level. So if you know your colours in French, why can't you just teach your colours?
Yeah.
And you can always learn a bit more, because whatever you know is going to be more than your child knows.
Of course.
And so I think so often we get into this, oh, to be a teacher, you need to be an absolute expert and know how to conjugate verbs and do all the grammar, which... You don't do that with a baby. You just chatter and say, right. Oh, look, the spoon is red. So why can't you do that in French or in German? There's nothing.
Yeah. So I think the important thing is that, at least in my opinion, is that it has to be fun. You know, you're not trying to sit down the kid and you know, speak to them in 12 hours in German to like put it in there. You know, you're not trying to, you know, that's not what it's about. It's about just adding an extra layer or fun or playtime or that happens to be in a different language, which would then, it will help you to tune the ears to foreign languages. It will help set a base for future language choices. It will help make like foreign language education more manageable and more enjoyable because they already know what it is and they already had good experiences. And I think I got this, I also got this from Richard Simcott, which you may know. He has a daughter who's, she might be close to 10 now, maybe a little bit younger.
All right. And I didn't know he had children. So now
he has a daughter. And of course, the whole world was watching this, not directly, but they were thinking like, well, he speaks a million languages. I don't know. Nobody actually knows. I don't think he even knows. But let's just say the good side of 20 probably is reasonable. Mm. And so everyone, of course, expected her to just be bombarded with languages and just grow up to be, you know, a hyperpolyglot right away. But when I talked to Richard about it, actually, it's interesting that he took the approach of she decides everything. So, and he said, okay, we'll have an hour of French, like playtime in French, or Spanish or whatever language. And then there'd be clear distinctions. So while they were on the swings, a bit like you said, while she was on the swing, you know, they would speak only in Spanish for that hour. And then, you know, they have, of course, Macedonian because they live there and they have French, they speak French at home, and of course English. Yeah. So, but what he said and stressed and underlined was it has to be fun and she has to be in control. So if she wants, if she doesn't want to, well, it's not going to be pushed upon her. But because I think some parents might try to do that, sort of live through their child in a way. Yes. I don't know if you've come across any examples of that, but I think it's important to mention.
I was chatting to it was a French speaking mum who actually I interviewed quite early on, and she was saying how she often feels that in some families they get so obsessed with bringing up bilingual children that they forget to actually have fun.
Yeah.
It's just like, we must do this and it's so important for, and it becomes a big, and they take them to the Saturday French school and make sure that they have play dates in French, and it just becomes a chore.
Yeah.
And it's so an obsession for them. I'm like, then that was her saying that, same. That was the first time I come across it. Because I was just like, I can't understand how. But I think it's for some people, it's sort of so important that they actually forget to have fun with it, which I think is sad then, because you've lost it. That's not what it's there. That's not what language learning is about.
Right.
Because actually, if you turn them off, if kids don't do anything they want to. You haven't got your own children.
No.
And ask anybody who's got kids. If they don't want to do it, they won't do it. That's right. It. So you just have to, you engage them when they want to engage and provide resources to use and and when they will, really.
Yeah, but that's also why you don't sit them down and make them read like a textbook. You actually just replace the English with you could have said dinner's ready, you know, you say it in German, because then it's just part of your life. You're not pushing anything on them. And I think if they don't notice they're learning, then sometimes it's easier.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, that's like with my Emily being surprised that people don't speak English. She would just speak English. It was a bit weird.
Yeah.
But she was so happy one day. We were walking to school. We were walking behind a mum and her daughter. And the mum was speaking fluent French. A daughter was replying fluently in English. But we could understand both sides of the conversation. And she was like, Emily was just like, that mum is speaking French and her daughter's speaking English. And she hadn't really seen that so often. And that's often what we do. We sort of have a conversation in two languages.
Right.
But which some people would go, that's awful. But to me, you're having a conversation. The point of language is conversation.
Right.
And if you're both understanding, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And it was beautiful to see this mum and her daughter, because I just thought, to them, that's how they communicate. And the daughter will speak French, I know, but she just was choosing not to at the time. But they were conversing.
Yeah.
Both in different languages.
Maybe that's a way to keep the heritage language alive. If they're immigrated from France or whatever, then as long as you speak that language to the kids, they'll definitely learn it. You know, it won't be a problem. But if you just completely ignore it and go straight to English, then you do run the risk of losing the generations of that language. And you have grandparents who speak German, for instance, but the kids don't speak it, the current generation.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much, I don't know, you do get it now and again nowadays. I mean, I think people are becoming aware that is just so, that people are becoming more aware that that's not really that helpful.
Right.
Because currently where we live, there are an awful lot of Polish, Romanian, Russian speaking children, well, families, and actually they do use their home language. And I've got a lovely lovely friend who is, they're from the Ukraine. Her husband is Russian. No, her husband's Ukrainian. She's Macedonian, but their home language is Russian.
Oh, wow.
So they have, but that's standard in that area because it was a Soviet bloc. That is quite standard for them.
Of course, yeah.
So their home language is Russian, but still doing the other languages. So when their sons came to school, were really worried that their son Vitor didn't speak English, but they had three languages to keep going with. And actually, within very short period of time, English was there.
Of course, it's why the country you live in. If it's a child, then they'll just suck it up like a sponge, because they know they have to do it to sort of fit in or be part of life. So that's the least of your worries, I feel like, if you in terms of languages.
The schools get scared because over here we've got something called Ofsted, which is the people that sort of measure the schools and make sure you're doing what you can. And if you get a good Ofsted score, then that's amazing, reflected on your school. So they're very controlled by that. So my friend Anna was getting a lot of hassle that her son didn't speak English and he ought to be doing more English with him. And I thought, they've got no idea. They just don't understand language development, that actually will come in time. Because his older brother came to England when he was 5 and within 6 months was fluent in English.
Yeah.
So it came. But because this school had such targets for their language development, they were stressing my poor friend Anna out about her son's lack of English. And I was like, just ignore them.
Yeah.
But there's a few friends I've got that work in schools that I've tried to sort of pass that on to, because it's like they don't understand that if you have got English as a second language, you may be a little bit behind, but it will come.
Of course, yeah.
Because they've got their tick lists of at a certain age you must speak this many words, because they're just British people are just not good at coping with people speaking more than one language.
No, they're not.
They're mad. They're...
But it's
not all
anyway.
Of them, but it's sad to hear sometimes.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about, I was thinking just now, is this kind of bilingual or multilingual even upbringing of children. Do you think that the popularity is growing, or do you think that it's just getting more visibility? Because I feel like, or I mean, this could be just because I wasn't in the loop or I wasn't in the community when I was growing up, but I just heard nothing of it. And the only people who learned multiple languages were bilingual children, so immigrants or immigrant families. But so the idea that, let's say, a native Brit or whatever is teaching her or his children, let's say, French or Spanish, or a language that they're not native in, or maybe even not even that fluent in.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a relatively new idea, or is it just because it's getting more visibility? And what kind of developments are you seeing from your side?
We're in an internet age. So now...
Oh, yeah, and why? Because if the internet is bringing everything together, you know, standardizing towards English, why is the interest for bilingualism or multilingualism growing?
Clever question, that. I think, you see, I came across a lovely, because I do an awful lot of meeting people online. I'm a bit of a serial networker. And I came across a lovely mum who lives in Carlisle who speaks. She actually is bringing up her daughter French, with French and English.
Is that in Wales, by the way, just for the international audience?
Carlisle's up north, northern England. Near Hadrian's Wall, if you've ever heard of that, where the
never. And I'm sure my American listeners are just going like, "What? What did you say?"
Very close to Scotland.
Okay.
Yeah. So, sorry, I forget you're not from here. But she, I don't know how I came across her on a Speak to the Future group, which is was a LinkedIn group about languages. So we started chatting, and she is bringing up her daughter. She's a single mum, bringing up her daughter with French and English. And I thought, I've got to meet her. And my family is from that area anyway. So when we were up in the holidays, we made time to actually meet her. And she's just, I mean, she doesn't speak, she speaks English, but she's a translator in French and German. So she's decided she's going to bring up her daughter to speak French as well as English. And I was just like, when I heard it, I was just over the moon, because I just thought that's where I'm at, that people are just happy to have a go with languages and not so scared that they're going to get it wrong. They'll just do it. And I'm not answering your question, am I, really? Things like that is the things I love. But I wouldn't have come across her if it hadn't been for the LinkedIn group.
Right.
So, yes, I think we're meeting people more because of that. But
it's interesting, isn't it, how in the more globalized world we're getting more people who are taking on non-globalizing sort of projects. For instance, if you're living in England, let's say 50 years ago, and you didn't have any contact with the outside world at all, Like, you didn't even know where Russia was on a map. Oh, maybe Russia you didn't know because of the the news and everything. But you didn't know where any foreigners. Like,
but the migration has always happened. There's always been migration, and that's there was something at the in London. We went to a big exhibition about migration, and actually, as people have travelled, they've taken their languages and their cultures with them. That's always happened. But I think, political rants slightly. But I think nowadays people are becoming a bit more narrow-minded. It's becoming more acceptable to be racist or anti-foreigners. So people then say, "Oh, we all these foreigners," and I say, "But actually, I'm from Bradford, which is in Yorkshire. It was all mills. It was cotton woolen mills. In the countryside near us, there were sheep. They took the wool from the sheep. They took it to the mills for it to be carded and made into wool and sent all over the world. They didn't have enough people to do it, so they brought people from Pakistan to come and work in the mills. Do you know what I mean? That happened. That was our my government's response to migrant needing jobs. So migration has always happened.
Yeah.
And people seem to forget that. And actually, if children are able to recognise people speaking different languages and know that people are different, or even just to, and for that to be acceptable and normal, you're totally changing a mindset. You're showing people that, and because I love languages. So if I see hear any sort of accent, I will say to somebody, "What language do you speak?" and try and learn a little bit, because that's me. But more recently, people get a bit cagey or worried, and I'm like, because they feel that they're being singled out, which scares me. Because I think that's not what I want. I'm interested because I love to at least learn to say hello and goodbye to people in their language, because it just, to me, that means a lot to be able to sort of be recognised like that. But right. It is sort of, so part of what I'm doing is I want people to see that people from other cultures are just as valuable. And I know I'm not sure. I think the world has gone politically a little bit crazy, and they seem to think that there's one best way and it's all globalisation. And I love families that are mixed race and mixed culture, and because it's just so much richer than this monoglot, everything the same.
Sure. But it's just, it just seems like it's a bit of a...
I just got excited. I think it might...
It's just weird.
I don't know if it's growing or more visible nowadays, if that makes sense. But that's what my heart is, just to get families using languages.
Well, it would be using, nice. I'm sure.
And the mums have got skills. And often when you've been... As a mum myself, I know when you're at home with your littlies, you do start to feel as if you've not got a brain anymore, because you're just changing nappies and watching Teletubbies. Or it's just like that. Sometimes your skills go to be able to meet with other mums who have also got language skills, and you're building your own confidence in using the skills you have.
Yeah.
And some of the lovely mums that come to my classes, one of them is now, she does graphic design for me, because we've sort of, so she started back into work with that. Another friend has started another kids group franchise, not directly through me, but through seeing what I'm done and working with me. She's sort of saying, "Oh, actually I could do that." So actually, I don't know. I like to be able to, I don't know. I have a bit of an obsession in sort of seeing people's skills and helping them to use them. So it's not, none of it's solely down to me, but I know I've had a big part to play in that, and I love it. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
Like you and your chief encouragement officer, I saw that on your LinkedIn. I think that's what I like to be. It's just like, I think so many people have got amazing skills that they can't see, and actually there's some things that only they could do. What I do, yeah. I don't think I'm uniquely skilled to do what I do, to be honest, and I feel a lot of us like that, and it's just finding your niche in there somewhere.
For sure.
Hopefully making some money at it.
Yeah, if possible. But I really like the idea of languages as a gateway to mutual understanding or empathy in a way, because I think if you're living a one language life and you're kind of, you know, you only know one culture, then it's very easy to put up a situation that's like us and them, But yes. If you start to learn just a little bit of the language and you start to even use it and start to speak it with the native speakers, then it just offers this interesting gateway that changes your mind a little bit. Because I remember when before I learned Russian, I had this very, I guess, stereotypical view of Russians, and especially in video games, they were always shouting and angry and calling people offensive stuff. And back then, it seemed to me like that was so typically Russian. But then when I started learning the language and I was kind of understanding them, and it's not like I don't have a I can't explain culturally why they are like that or why that seemed to be what my experience with Russians were, but just learning it, I was too kind of like just eventually just accepting it and eventually just going like, oh, I don't have any sort of bias against Russian people. No. You know, they're just as, you know, you can find English people screaming mad as well. You know, it's not exclusive to one country, but just learning the language kind of, it wasn't like I became a part of it, but I just started subconsciously treating it very differently. So I really think that the road to kind of cultural harmony and everything is through languages first and foremost, and introducing kids to the idea that there are different languages and different cultures, but they're not at the foundation level, they're not different. You know, it's different languages, but the people at the very core are people just like the rest of the world. So, yeah, I think that's how it starts. But I'm still interested in the idea of how. I guess it's like a response. If the world becomes really globalized, I guess then you kind of take it the other way. Maybe it's a counter response to.
I don't really see. Yeah, we've got we have a lovely Polish delicatessen shop, and being German food is all bread and sausages, and it's quite similar to Polish food. So for starters, we started to go to that shop because they have proper bread, and German English bread is crap.
Yeah, it really is. It's like white bread all the time.
Yeah, but they have proper bread, and they have Auschnitt, which is sliced sausage. And so we started just to go in for that, and then I thought, actually, I can learn a little bit of Polish, so I can now say poproszę pięć plastikas mortadella, which means please can I have five slices of mortadella, because my daughter loves that. So we started with that, and then I learned another one, and I can say jeszcze masz, which is how are you. And so each time I go, I learn a little, and I've got a Polish speaking friend who I WhatsApp back and forth, and he tells me how you actually spell it. So I've been picking up bits of that, and the kids are the same now, so they can say cześć, which is hello, and they can say do widzenia, goodbye, and so they're just picking it up because that's what we do. So that's a physical place where we speak Polish, which is lovely, and they've got nice food that we like to buy, and it's a nice little shop. But in that, one of the ladies was chatting to us the other day and saying that she was a grandma and telling about her grandkids, which she wouldn't have done if it wasn't for that. And it's just like, as you try to speak a little of somebody's language, it's just you're moving so much further towards them that they want to talk to you. I'm all about relating to people, and if I can do it in their language, I feel it makes a massive difference. It's quite hilarious sometimes, because we've got a lot of Urdu speakers who they all speak Arabic. So usually you can just say "Salam alaikum" and they will respond with "Wa alaikum as-salam." But a lot of the times they will look, you say "Salam alaikum," they say "Wa alaikum as-salam," and then look and think that's a white girl speaking to what's going on there, which I love. Yeah. Or somebody I hear speaking Romanian and I'll go "Bună dimineața," and they'll look at me and I just love it. I like to shock people by randomly just greeting them in their language.
Yeah, and I think
that's just me.
But you know, it's funny. It illustrates a point that I often bring up on the podcast, is that language learning is not something where you have to work hard for years and then you get a reward. It's like you learn one word and then you can get the reward, you know, because you're like, now I know one word in Polish. And then you actually meet someone, you say that word, and their eyes light up. They go like, what? You know, they really get surprised that you actually know some.
And I love words like cześć, because cześć is like ciao. So it's hello and goodbye. So you've got all that. So if you've got all that we use for one word, Because there was a mum I met recently who, her parents spoke Polish, but didn't really pass it on to her. So her daughter doesn't know any Polish at all. So I said, can I teach you one word? So I taught her Czech. So every time I see her, I keep saying Czech. So I'm thinking, if she's got that one word, she's actually getting.
Yeah.
It's not really my problem. But now every time I see that family, I'll say, Dzień dobry or Czech, and get their reply. So it's like.
Yeah.
I feel it is my mission to help them bring that back to their language skills that they seem to have forgotten.
Well, it just sounds like fun, you know.
I must drive people mad. I'm slightly upset.
Well, I can imagine you strolling around the local village or city just speaking to everyone in their language.
I get really sad if I haven't done 5 languages before 10 o'clock.
Right.
I feel like I've missed out because there's usually the opportunity with sort of Russian and Polish and different people around to at least try something. I do. I get quite sad if I haven't done it. If I've done 12 in a day, I'm just like. In fact, I met a man in a bookshop at the hospital where we chatted and found out he spoke more than one language. So we had a conversation in about 5 languages. And I was like, I felt like I was flying. It was awesome. And it wasn't a lot of it was basic, but I'm like, I can do this.
So what are your, ignore the kids for a little while, what are your own sort of language ambitions? Do you plan to take some of them to a higher level, or do you just want to keep like adding little bits of new languages all the time?
I don't know. I'm a bit obsessive, really. I've got my French, German and Spanish. Technically, I'm qualified to the level I did in school, although my German will be way beyond because I speak it regularly. My Spanish and French will be beyond as well, because as I'm learning alongside the kids, as I'm teaching new things, I have to learn more. In fact, I had a native German family who wanted me to work with them, which was really interesting. I really had to. I set up more, they call it Kindergruppe, which is like a play group, and it was just for these native German children to come together and to do songs and stories in German, because otherwise they would speak English.
Of course, easy.
So that was lovely, but it was bloody hard because I had to get my German.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly working on those languages. As I said, I've done Polish because actually in January, they always do a language challenge. And I thought, I'll do Polish. So I did Polish for that for a month, and I've carried that on. I'm learning Slovak, ready for the language challenge. Slowly. Are you doing that one?
Oh, no.
Boring.
Well, I don't know. I don't... I like the idea of a language challenge, but I just feel like I've got so many challenges, not just languages, but I've got so many language projects that I feel like if I keep skipping around, then I'll never really get anywhere. And the random nature of, okay, the conference is in Slovakia, then I'll learn Slovak. For me, that's not enough of a reason. So I purposefully don't learn anything, and I didn't learn any Greek for Greece either for the conference. And you know, this might be blasphemous almost to say, but I feel like if you want to get fine language learning, like really high proficiency, which is of course a completely different objective than just casual conversations or even just knowing a lot in a lot of languages or not knowing a lot in a lot of languages, but I just feel like I'm too scatterbrained already. So if I start to take on random challenges based on random locations or random prompts, then I just distract myself from the main challenges that I've set myself, which I'm already not doing too well at. So, that's basically my reasoning. But I love it when people do it because I think it's slightly mad, but at the same time, very, it's very commendable because I think I am
very competitive. That is one of my weaknesses. So when I heard about a challenge, I'm like, got to do this. And also, I don't know, apart from a little bit of Polish, I don't know many Slavic languages. So I know once you can sort of get a grip on a Slavic language, it actually gives you a real foothold in any of the other Slavic languages.
For sure, yeah.
So that's why I felt that would be good. And I just decided one day I was going to Slovakia, so I thought, right, I'm going to do this. So I'm doing that. I learned enough Mandarin in 6 weeks to do a basic class for the kids, which was fun. This lovely lady sent me a lovely lady called Tony has written a Mandarin CD. It's a really funky kids one called A Little Mandarin. So she said, she contacted me on Twitter and said, would you like a copy? And I'm like, yes, please. So I started listening and I sort of learnt the songs in one order, as did my kids. And I thought, oh, we've done that. Yeah. So I picked that up. And then I think it was with you Talk and Pimsleur. We just picked up things like hello and goodbye and please and thank you. Just a few phrases. So I can now deliver a Chinese New Year class.
That's great.
Makes me laugh. Yeah. I can do that. And I can sing in Mandarin, which is just so awesome. So yeah, that was just a bit of a challenge and it was fun. But I would say if I had my own way, I would learn lots of different languages and, as you say, easily forget them as well. So really, I'm still working on my French, German and Spanish are my main ones, but I do get a bit easily distracted, especially if I meet somebody. I think, well, I've got to at least learn to say hello, goodbye, thank you. And
well, it is a common, I wouldn't call it a problem, but it's certainly a common trait amongst language learners that, you know, you kind of see, I guess the grass is greener sometimes when the language you're not learning seems super interesting. shiny object syndrome almost, you know, where you just, oh, yes. And there's some... just yesterday, you know, I was kind of bored and I procrastinated by learning like 33 of the most common Chinese radicals memorized, which is like totally useless and totally a distraction. But, you know, one day I might use it for something.
Then you see, this is like there's Dothraki in Game of Thrones, and that is just such an awesome language. I don't know if you've heard that.
Yeah,
it's just so guttural and amazing. It's just like it's one of the conlangs, made up languages. It is conlang, isn't it?
Yeah.
Construction language. But yeah, so that's it. I did start a bit of Esperanto in a challenge about a year back, and I really would like to get on with that because I can read in Esperanto if I need to because of the romance languages I have. Right. I could actually read in it. So I'm like, I really ought to get going with my... with my Esperanto as well.
It's not that hard, so I think you'd learn it in a couple of weeks if you just put your mind to it. It's super easy.
But I've currently got the time limit on Slovak, so I'm...
Oh yeah, of course. You don't want to confuse the languages.
And Polish and Slovak are so similar that does my head in.
For sure.
Because you get... Nie rozumiem is I don't understand in Polish, or nie rozumiem is I don't understand in Slovak.
Right.
Which sounds very similar. And then there's random things that are really different. But so I'm trying to not do too much Polish to try and keep my Slovak, but right. We'll see.
Yeah, you want to keep them separate, I think.
Try to, but they feel so similar. It's like I find that with them, if I'm not careful, my French and Spanish, I can do that because some things are so similar.
Yeah.
To try. So occasionally I will come out with a French word in Spanish and then realise, but sometimes it's so similar nobody notices.
Right.
Well, German is so different. I'm pretty safe there.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, time is flying, as we mentioned in the first part of the talk, and we're already at the end point. But before, I just wanted to get kind of a quick... maybe your top tips or top recommendations for any parents or parents-to-be who are sitting out there and they kind of want to do what you're doing, or they want to teach their kids languages from the beginning. What are your top tips of what you think they should be doing or what they should do more of in addition to what we've already talked about, of course?
Right. I mean, the main thing is that you're not scared. Don't be too scared to try, because as parents, we make mistakes anyway. That's part of the joy of parenting. So with language learning, don't be worried that what you pass on is not perfect. That can always be ironed out later on. Find yourself some other parents that are doing it. Because when my Josh was young, there was nobody else, and it was flipping lonely and hard work. So if you can find yourself groups of parents that are doing language learning, it's going to really encourage you. There's a bloke called Adam Beck that's got a group called Bilingual Monkeys, or Rita Rosenbach is brilliant as well, and she's got another bilingual learning group. So if you can find some people to support you in that, that will make your life easier. The other thing is just find some resources that are fun. If you like storybooks, find some really nice storybooks. Things like, my favourite storybook ever is The Very Hungry Caterpillar, and I've got that in four languages because once the children understand it in one language, it's easy to carry on. And the other thing is sing. If you can, you can sing in the car, you can sing anywhere, and in singing you're getting good accent, and you can actually sing way beyond your level, but actually that sinks in, and eventually you'll understand what you actually are singing. And it's lots of fun because you can sing in the bath or anywhere. My favourite song, I'll quick plug, there's a lovely song about a boat on the water, which I'm just going to sing at you. So you get your children as if they're rowing, and it goes, bateau sous l'eau, la rivière, bateau sous l'eau, la rivière, et plouf dans l'eau. So at the end, you splash in the water, and then you just carry on singing. It's such a simple one, but it's a lovely bath time song that just becomes part of your bath time routine.
Right. And kids love singing anyway, you know. They
do. Yeah. And actually, if you look on my Lingotastic website, if you click through to my YouTube, we've got loads of songs that are tried and tested, including a very good one about a cow called Lola who has a head and a tail and she says moo. Really simple. But if you can do it in Spanish, you've suddenly, in minutes, you've picked up lots of really useful vocab. In fact, most of the songs are about animals because most children love making animal noises.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I've got a very quick plug. I've produced a lovely CD that's called Mostly German, which is a lot of it's traditional German songs, but we've translated them into English in a single form. We've got Twinkle Twinkle Little Star in five languages, including Esperanto, and Faire Jacques in, I think, four languages. So if you buy my CD from our website, you can be singing along in the car and you can be singing in all these languages. Really easy.
Very nice, very nice.
And it's only £10 plus postage and packing.
That's perfect. Very professional.
Sorry, quick pitch. Yeah. We all have to eat, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's also, you know, you touched on that earlier, that if you can find something you're passionate about and you can actually make a living of it, then the kind of everything comes together. But sometimes it's not possible, and it's definitely difficult. But I know that, you know, if you keep doing what you're doing, then the world is going to also start to pick up on the fact that, you know, kids' multilingual education is something we need to be doing more of. And we need to get people engaged from the beginning instead of waiting until they're, you know, 6 or 7 or even 8 sometimes.
Yeah.
Before they start learning another language. And they start dubbing everything, you know, even the movies and TV shows are dubbed in some countries, which just creates very bad second language speakers.
Yeah. I was speaking to my husband, Mike, learned a lot of his English through Danger Mouse and MTV because it was in German, but with English subtitles.
Right.
No, in English with German subtitles. So he was hearing that language day after day.
But there are lots of countries where you can live your entire life without hearing any other language. Like, Germany is a notorious one. I think France also. I know definitely Hungarian. I got like a million TV channels included in my Hungarian internet subscription. And there was like nothing in English. Even Discovery Channel and TLC and everything was dubbed. And they didn't even supply the original track for most of the channels. So you could watch like the movie channel, and that was what it was called in the directory, but it would be English movies dubbed into Hungarian, and you couldn't choose the right language. And that's really why I think you get poor foreign language speakers, and you get more nationalistic in a way, but I just don't understand why it's not so apparent. Like, if you look at the countries that don't dub but use subtitles instead, they have amazing English ability, almost native-like.
Yeah, but Holland, definitely.
Yeah, the Netherlands are famous for it, the Scandinavian countries also. And you just think, like, why doesn't anyone notice that? Like, what? It's so obvious that that's what needs to happen. You need to not dub everything. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't dub kids' TV, because that's kind of, that's possibly an exception. I don't know. It would be nice to watch foreign kids' TV as well as your native one, but I don't know how kids do with subtitles and stuff. That maybe that's too much.
No, I think it's all you're looking at about 7 or 8 before they can keep track with that, can read quick enough for subtitles.
So it's better just to have native, French cartoons instead of English ones, and then just to have French cartoons with English subtitles. And I guess that's more immersion-like anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a long that's a discussion for another time, and perhaps slightly more political ideology here that we want to change the world. But
yes, definitely. Why not?
I hope we play our little part, and then
I think I think it makes a difference, because it just makes even just making people more aware. I do an awful lot of social media, and I think in even just mentioning about people speaking more than one language, I think eventually it sort of sinks into people that it is possible and it's a value. And
yeah,
so that's my.
I hope so. But anyway, thank you so much for the work that you do and for coming on and sharing it with the world and giving your tips and advice. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in person in Slovakia, in Bratislava.
That's exciting.
Where we're going to enjoy the Praga gathering to see if they can uphold the wonderful tradition that's been going on for, I guess this is the fourth one now, maybe the fifth even. But obviously it's a new team organizing it with the help of the old team, so we'll see if it's going to be just as good or maybe even better.
Different.
Different, I hope, for sure. It would be weird if it felt the same when you're in a new country. But thank you so much, Sarah, I hope to stay in touch.
Yeah, thank you. How do I say goodbye in Danish? I don't know Danish.
You can say farvel.
Farvel.
Yes. Okay. That just means bye.
Bye. That's all right. Sorry, I know no Danish.
You can also say hi.
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 Oh, as in right.
You can say that twice. Then that's one.
Hi.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the flexible Danish words. If you say hi, it's usually a greeting. If you say hi, it's usually a goodbye. Hi.
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 Thank you. It's been a joy.
Thank you. All right. Talk to you soon.
Bless you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast. If you would like to get more out of the podcast, check out the VIP Club by going to actualfluency.com/VIP.